You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, everyone, for coming. This is lovely to see you. My name is Martin Poole. I'm the founder of Beyond, which is an arts collective based in Brighton. We produce art events in public, which are kind of worship and art. The most famous thing we've come up with is a thing called the Beach Hut Advent Calendar, which quite a few people know about. Before that, I ran the Greenbelt Worship Program until we moved to this site, and also was involved in a couple of Sunday morning communion services here. I'm now a parish priest, an Anglican parish priest, also in Brighton, so that's my day job. We've got a fantastic panel here of people who've got a wealth of experience in this field, and they're each going to introduce themselves and their connection to alternative worship. So, Urella, do you want to start off?
Yeah, is this working okay? Oh, I'll use this. Yeah, so I'm Urella Andrews. Most of my work's been in academia, so that's almost been like my space, if you like. But I was involved with something called Vox in between about 2000 and 2003. This was an event that was set up by Kester Bruin and Nick Hughes and others. And I think later we'll say a little bit more about that. But I think for me, I'm not sure whether that came under the auspices necessarily of alternative worship as such. We were a bunch of artists, DJs, writers who just wanted to explore new ideas around urban spirituality. So we just set up in a slightly underused church, and we just kind of, well, I'll say more about what we did then, but yeah. And now I'm Professor Emeritus, so I've just left my job at Goldsmiths, where I've been for about 25 years. So now I'm sort of involved in more focused writing and research, but also I'm very, very involved in various kind of community things. Like I run a public green space in London and places like that. And I very much see those as my sites of worship. So hopefully get a chance to talk more about that a little bit later on as well.
Thanks, Urella. And an arts practitioner, which I think is an important thread that you'll see through some of this. Doug Paget. Not Paget, Doug Gay, sorry. Sorry, we suddenly... it's because the last time I saw you was in the US.
Okay, my name's Doug Paget. My name's Doug Gay, and I am Senior Lecturer in Practical Theology at the University of Glasgow. I'm a Church of Scotland minister. And I was involved in two main eras of alternative worship groups. So I was a founder member of the Late Late Service in Glasgow. There's at least one other founder member here. My wife is sitting at the back. And there may be others. I don't know exactly whether Andy Thornton's in the room or not. And we were then very involved in bringing the Late Late Service to Greenbelt in a number of years, and we led main stage worship, and we also led early morning worship, trying to set up a full alternative worship rig for 9 in the morning was very challenging. But we did that for a few years, and some of you might have been at that. And then subsequently, I worked as a URC minister in Hackney, and there was a group, alt-worship congregation, emerging congregation called Host, which I was involved in for a few years there. And I'm currently not very alternative, I don't think. But.
And Sue Wallace.
Does this work? No, it doesn't. Hello. Oh. I need a bit more wire. There we are. Hi, I'm Sue Wallace. I was reflecting, actually, I think Greenbelt sort of changed my life in a way because I wandered into a tent in 1988 when the 9 o'clock service were doing a service. And for me, just that creativity and the blending together of threads of my previous life and different parts of my family and the arts and the music and the chant. Because I sing, so I was kind of into singing as well. Kind of changed my life, really. I ended up, a little group of us sat on a lawn, a group about 88, and started chatting and saying, you know, we think we need to do something. God's calling us to something, but we're not sure what. And out of that was born the Visions community, and out of that was born Visions, which was an alternative worship service and still is, actually. Visions is still going up in York. It's moved to All Saints North Street, and it's still there, and you can visit. After that, I you sort of get an itch sometimes, and I basically got called to be ordained. So now I'm an ordained Anglican priest. And I've done a sort of cathedral crawl, really, because I discovered that cathedrals are a really cool place to do creative worship stuff, and often very permission-giving environments and edgy environments where they kind of blend between the arts and creativity, and you get pilgrims or tourists, and they're not sure what they are really, but the tourists become pilgrims, and that really interests me. And so now, having been up in Leeds at Leeds Minster and then at Winchester Cathedral, I'm now actually at Truro Cathedral, and I'm in charge of the worship there at the moment and still get a chance to do stuff. We've got a group called Krez, which do amazing stuff. They do most of the work and I just come in and improvise on the harp, which is fun. So I'm still doing worship and so are Visions. And oh yeah, and I wrote some prayer books along the way, which you may have.
And finally, Johnny Baker. Again, seeing Johnny have one microphone with two microphones working.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm Johnny. I'm involved in Grace in London, which came out of the alternative worship movement. We celebrated our 30th anniversary last year, which was fun and exciting. We were all surprised to still be there and alive. I absolutely loved my engagement with alternative worship, which I think first happened through being given a cassette of the late service and listening to it and thinking, wow, you can have worship and like it. I mean, seriously, it was like, a real change point. And I just loved the engagement with the creativity of various groups. And around about that time, I can't remember exactly, started blogging as well. Anyone remember what a blog is? And that just became a bit of a hub and a way of connecting with people around the world, particularly America, New Zealand, Australia, I suppose Western contexts largely. So yeah, I've just been engaged with it. And then for quite a few years, I facilitated the New Forms worship with Greenbelt, particularly at Cheltenham. We ran two venues. Anyone remember those days? Yeah. New Forms was an indoor venue upstairs, which just hosted anyone and everyone. I don't know, cyber feminist, Eucharist through to Labyrinths, whatever. And then there was an installation venue as well, which was very interactive. It became very all age, largely thanks to Sonia Mainstone, who might be here somewhere. So Greenbelt was a real amplifying space, I think, at that time too, which was terrific. And we might talk about that more, but yeah, I've been involved in it one way or another. Now I work with the Church Mission Society, really encouraging people who are wanting to connect with, in some way, those at the edges beyond the church. It turns out there's a massive edge beyond the church, so there's lots of possibility there. And I guess things have flipped around a little bit in terms of the people I work with. It tends to be engagement with community, but that creative, imaginative worship doesn't tend to be the start point that you think people would be attracted to. Hopefully it emerges out of the engagement with the culture, network people that you're working with. But I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But yeah, lovely to be with you. And great to see so many of you here. I mean, maybe we're just all old.
There's something about age that's to do with this topic, actually. We've already heard alternative worship, something about emerging. We haven't yet mentioned fresh expressions. We thought it would be useful if we got a little bit, because Johnny's the old hand at this, a bit of a definition of the space, what we're talking about when we say alternative worship, emerging church, which will also come into the conversation, fresh expressions and pioneering now.
Okay, I'll try and be very quick on this. Some of you might know Steve Collins. He's not here, but he did a great favour to the movement by documenting, really, through the website alternativeworship.org, smallfire.org and smallritual.org. I mean, certainly two of those are still up. So I looked up those websites. It took me about half an hour to get a connection this morning, but finally I did. And this is what Steve says on one of those sites. Alternative worship was about Christians reinventing faith expression for themselves within their own cultural settings. I think at its heart, that's a pretty good sense of it. And I think for a lot of people when it started, it just felt like there's a disconnect between what happens in worship in church and my real life. And the question we were exploring was, what would it be like if that gap wasn't there? Now, I mean, I happen to be in London, so that question was around, you know, visual projections, dance music, or at least the chilled out end of that. But it didn't really matter what that was. There was a kind of quest for authenticity, you know, it would be authentic if it came out of who we were and the culture. So I think that was the heart of it. I think it was amplified because of, I don't know what you want to call this, but the postmodern shift, you know, the wider shifts in Western culture. And somehow it felt like what had been, I think quite, it's easy to forget this, but, you know, charismatic renewal and all this stuff in the church was actually pretty liberating at the time, but that felt like it had ossified a bit. So felt like we were in a bit of a post-charismatic space, but that postmodern shift was part of it. And it was a very theological conversation. I mean, out of Greenbelt, the first online discussion forum I ever joined was called Postmodern Christian, and it was people reading black theology, liberation theology, feminist theology, and trying to think that through in terms of their articulation. So I think it was theological from the get-go. You might expect me to say this as I work for CMS, but I think it was a missional question, mission to the wider culture, perhaps. I mean, I think we deluded ourselves in that we thought if we did something that related to the culture, people would come, but actually they just thought it was a different kind of weird. But, you know, you learn. But I think there was that mission drive there, and I think it was a movement. You know, late 80s, early 90s and onwards, it was lay people not getting paid for it, excited by what they heard, saw about. Did anyone get the newsletter Regenerate through Greenbelt? Yeah, Jeremy over here has still got copies, because when we were talking about this, he gave me three copies of it. And there was a list in the back of that with groups doing things and phone numbers. You could ring them up and go and visit. I mean, that was so exciting at Greenbelt to connect with. And it was a movement in that sense. You know, you just felt there was an energy in that engagement. So those are a few angles I would say on that. The relationship quickly with Fresh Expressions Pioneering is that the Church of England Methodist Church sort of caught up, I suppose, with the fact that there were new things popping up around the edges of the church. And I think, to their credit, said, it's great, these new things are popping up. Published a report on it, said we need a mixed ecology of church, let's have these new things as well as the old. And chose, I think, the language of Fresh Expressions because that didn't locate it in any particular stream or movement, because they were connecting with church planting as well as alternative worship, what became emerging church. So that was Fresh Expressions of Church. And I think the other thing that happened with that was that quite quickly we realized this isn't just about worship, it's about discipleship, spirituality, theology, church, everything's up in the air, needs changing, that we're trying to reimagine. And then the pioneering that I've been particularly working with, that I've really, really enjoyed, is it was really saying that actually what happens if you flip it the other way around, rather than starting with worship, trying to attract people to that, maybe engaging with the community missionally would be good, and spirituality, prayer, expressions of worship are more likely to grow out of the soil of that engagement rather than be front-ended. And I think that was a great move, and lots has happened in that way. So that's, for me, that's the sort of join up on that. I mean, we did say earlier on the panel, everyone out there, we asked what alternative worship was, and for a definition, you probably all come up with different things, but that's the Johnny Baker, Steve Collins spin.
Thank you. And I think the term from Fresh Expressions came from the ordinal for the Church of England about finding ways to do things afresh. Urella, at Vox, we were talking a little bit beforehand about what that was like. What could you describe what it was like being involved with a group like that and how it kind of worked for you?
Yeah, so we were all... some of us were kind of refugees, if you like, from charismatic Anglican churches. Others of us, like me, were still quite kind of connected, but I think what all of us probably felt was that there just wasn't a space within the churches we were going to really bring, I would describe it as our kind of creative and experimental best to those environments. And so I wasn't involved right at the start, but I can remember we would put on a service once a month, but the period leading up to that, we'd meet in somebody's flat and we'd pray and we'd see what maybe what themes came up, and then different ones of us, some of us were DJs, I was more on the sort of writing art kind of side, there were artists, all sorts of people, and we'd kind of go off and start creating and planning and putting things together. And what was really special about that was that it was a very small group, so there was a real sense of trust and almost a commissioning of each other to go off and do things. And, you know, we'd meet up every week and then we'd arrive at this sort of, in my mind, it was a derelict church, but actually they did. I think they had a congregation of about six people. And the vicar very, very generously said, I was talking to Kestra about this earlier, and he just said, look, use the space, go for it. I don't mind what you do, use it. And so we'd just turn up on the day with all sorts of bits and pieces. We'd create installations. We really didn't know how things were going to come together. We didn't know who would turn up. It was a public event. And so there was this real sense in it, there was a sense of a real sort of process of prayer, intense preparatory work, and then just that sense of, right, here we go, what's going to happen? Anything could happen. And I think it was that combination for me that was incredibly powerful. I can remember once we did something around a kind of celebratory meal, and we had about, I'm sure in my mind, it was about eight or nine Afghan dope growers somehow turned up and joined us. Where did they come from? How did they know about this? I've got absolutely no idea. But yeah, so is that kind of answering the question? It was just wonderful. I still look back with longing, actually, at that sort of period. Yeah.
I think for all of us, the practice of producing or curating worship of this kind was life-giving for our own faith as
Definitely.
Well. And sorry, I should have said that while I'm asking questions like this, anybody can chip in, assuming we can get all the microphones working. But it quite early on, so you've already heard Grace has been running for 30 years. The 9 o'clock service we saw here in 1988. By 2011, Doug wrote this book, Remixing the Church, which is looking at some theology around this, but also was beginning to say, it may be that we're very close to the end of emerging as a useful term for the church, and if so, I confess at the outset that I'm relaxed about this. There was always already a feeling by 2011 this movement was beginning to wane. Doug, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about that, especially having written this and maybe some of the theology behind that.
Yeah, I mean, on the way in, Johnny said, I hope this is not going to be too nostalgic. And I was really disappointed because I'm only here for the nostalgia. But I have to say that it was, you know, I mean, what you were describing is very like what the Late Late Service was in Glasgow and what Host was in Hackney. And I wish I didn't have to say this, but I look back on that as some of really the most exciting and creative and generative times I've spent within the church and in worship preparation. And one of my concerns is, I think I'm an old guy now, and if you're a sensible old person, you want to see younger people doing better than you, being edgier, being more creative, pushing past what you've done. I have real question marks whether anything has yet pushed back some of what, and I would love a challenge from that, because I think we've gone back from that model of co-production and the creativity and experimentation to something which is we've gone back into the charismatic, front-led, you know, big concert worship stars up the front. One of our rules at the Late Late Service was there is no front. And if we had a worship, a band playing, they were deliberately at the back and people were looking in other directions and that kind of thing. very quickly, to answer the question I was asked, I wrote the book, which is still great value, actually, and very worth
I highly recommend it.
investing in. And that was, I think it was a sense that we were moving to the end of, people stopped using that language. You know, these terms, people stopped talking about postmodernism at one point as well. Sometimes these things just slip out. And people were beginning to stop talking about the emerging church and alternative worship. And so I wrote the book as an attempt to reflect on what had happened as a practical theologian and in terms of understanding what it meant for the church, and suggested there were five. Do you want to know what the five moves are of the emerging church, which I set out in the book? One was auditing, which was like, you know, where are we? Including things like, how did Protestant churches end up with such a kind of creatively and artistically reduced palette. The second one was retrieval, looking at what you wanted to go back into tradition to retrieve. The third was unbundling, which was the fact that what was interesting about this was low church Protestants in many cases were going back into tradition and selectively taking Catholic practices and symbols and rituals and reusing them. The fourth thing was supplementation, which was the idea of bringing new things in, and technology was a big part of this movement. And the fifth thing was remixing, was about trying to create a new whole out of that. And I would still stand by that. I think it was, you know, I look back and I would stand behind that as a way of thinking, actually, how change happens within churches generally. There's often those five moves involved in any new movement within the church. I'll stop there.
And if you need another encouragement, Nadia Boltz-Weber says, Doug Gay has pulled off a rare combination of solid scholarship, personal experience, and theological heft, all while actually making a whole lot of sense. I'm so grateful for this book. We all approached Nadia to ask her to endorse our books. It's important to also recognise that this hasn't stopped. And as Sue said, there are still groups doing it. Yeah. Sue, just to talk about that a little
bit. So I was really interested in what Doug was saying, because I think since moving to Cornwall, one of the things which has excited me is what's going on with Cres, who Cres is Cornish for peace, by the way. And they're doing most of the kind of planning and stuff. But one of the things I love is that some of the things we did in Visions pre-recorded, they dare to do live. So there might be like live synth washes, and they're sending musicians around the building and doing that kind of there is no front thing, because there's kind of a violin playing from the back and a flute from the other corner. And then they'll send me off up somewhere else with the harp, and that beautiful live improvisation, but with a synth wash holding it all together. And that was like, great, I'm seeing these glimpses of the next generation running with it and doing something a bit different with the same kind of criteria. That is something very important about empowering the people of God themselves to create and make something beautiful together, rather than just sort of be spectators of something that's happening at the front.
That's a really... Sorry, go on, Johnny.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of things happening now... as I say, the kind of order's flipped, but certainly some of the pioneers that have trained with us and are doing things. I was thinking about this earlier. David Harrigan set up a community out of with men out who were interested in boxing as a way of recovering their life. And through that, two practices they had were meeting over curry in a sort of Last Supper style. This is in Romford in the out east of London. But the other thing they did that I thought was a real different example was to do Compline in the boxing ring, where you basically had four stations in each corner and a bell would ring every 2 minutes and you went to the next corner. So, you know, that's alt worship. Gav, who's at the back there, ran Art Trail in Easter with local artists in Wales. Had somebody who's developed an Alice in Wonderland Eucharist, which is all about seeing the world upside down. There's a group in Derby who developed a kind of connection with ex-offenders and addicts and so on through a coffee roastery as a sort of re-employing them. And they wrote a thing called the Sacred Bean Eucharist, which was a lovely kind of practice where they all put a bean into the grinder as a symbol of unity and so on. The Methodist Church didn't think it was a Eucharist, but that's another story. So, yeah, I mean, and there's loads. I mean, the outdoors stuff is possibly a thing we've seen a lot of. And actually, because of this site, Greenbelt has possibly engaged more with that than any other thing. So things like mountain pilgrims in Cumbria and so on. So I think there's a lot of imaginative mission jargon work, contextual stuff out there, but it's kind of coming about a different way around.
But there's definitely been an interesting shift from the kind of techno 90s stuff that was very reliant on video projectors and techno music into something more natural and in the wild. I just wonder how many people here would regard themselves as being involved with something that's alt worship right now. Put your hands up. Oh, no, okay. Not as many as I thought. I thought there might be more. But it is still ongoing. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the community gardening kind of aspect, and because I think lots of people are finding there's obviously Wild Church here, and they're finding connection that way as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things I think that's really interested me about worship is, in the Hebrew tradition, there are so many inflections to that word, and one of them is about service and this idea of public service as well. And so I'm really interested in this sort of seeing, particularly sites that I'm very drawn to sites that are quite a little bit devastated or derelict or neglected. And that's probably why I was really kind of keen on that Vox space as well, which was this kind of rather neglected and underused sacred space. So I'm really interested in the ways in which, by sort of serving in just in one of those places, like this kind of green space around the corner from me, it's public green space that people are constantly coming in and trying to burn things down, vandalize. It's a really interesting, almost, I almost see it as a kind of, it takes the temperature of the area almost. It's quite a hidden space, but the things that go on in there are quite symptomatic of what happens in this sort of area of Southeast London that I live in. And so for me, I'm the only Christian in working in that area as I was with my workplace. But there's something I think about working and serving and making for me that is absolutely at the center of what worship is. So it doesn't have to be about saying particular things or doing particular ritualistic acts or whatever, but I think there's something about trying to, through your presence and through trying to just serve the people around you, that you're kind of opening up a kind of sacred space there, and things begin to happen. And I'm beginning to see random people suddenly coming up to me. I end up praying for them. You know, things like that. So I think something, it's like changing the kind of energies. And for me, that's a really important. So that's the kind of direction I'm going in with it all. So it's not really about church buildings or those kinds of spaces. It's just about finding, you know, spaces you're drawn to.
Is there something about a hub, creating a hub where people can gather within that?
Sort of, but it's not even a hub yet. I mean, maybe it's a pre-hub. it's almost like digging hard ground. That's how I see it. It's like a kind of digging hard ground and trying to, sort of create the foundations perhaps for something that maybe will get built later on.
Because I was aware of one of the things I think I've missed about Greenbelt is that hub, that it used to be the place where we would gather and we'd swap crazy ideas, or things would be born out of something we'd seen or something we'd done, which actually may be completely disconnected to the original inspiration, but just that hub of gathering creative brains and just seeing what happens.
I also want to say there is something about all of those activities that was about getting out of church. And Graham Cray, who was also very important about the kind of instigator of some of this, wrote about mission. And there was the kind of mission in three modes. That there was the kind of mission that where people stood at the church door and said, come in. There was the kind of mission where people went out and said, please come to my church. And there was the kind of mission that actually went out and stayed with people and said, we want to be with you. And there was always a feeling of that in alternative worship, even though often it was in church buildings, but certainly for myself, for Beyond, lots of our work was public on the seafront and in parks and in upper rooms in pubs and things like that. And I'll talk about my book later. but I think there was something about the postmodern world that wanted to get away from church to a certain extent. So, Doug, you got anything to say about that?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that Johnny was describing, getting us past the nostalgia, and that's a good thing. I mean, I'm not trying to imply there's not lots of creative mission practice there. I suppose I was trying to say something about the kind of gathering and event and liturgical event, thinking about it in terms of it being worship. And it seems to me, I'm interested in this question of what's happened to alternative worship, what's happened to the left and to the right of it, if you like, if that's one way to put this. And it seems to me that if you to the right of it, that what has happened is a doubling down on the model that we were trying to retreat from and critique. So if you think about, if you like Hillsong and Bethel, you've got this. The tech is better. There's more visual accompanying it, but what's being presented is still a very kind of concert style performance, where the worship leaders become superstars, and the people consuming that are very much, in a sense, consumers. Now, I am quite critical of that, and I think that lots of us who got involved in alt worship were just, the banality of what we were being asked to sing in church week by week was just soul destroying for us. And the trouble is that hasn't gone away. Lots of us are still being asked to sing banal and soul destroying things in church. So the sense of what was going to happen to that tradition. On the other hand, one of the problems was we did not come up with a model that replaced it effectively. And as we got to the end of the year of alternative worship, more and more groups I knew of stopped singing. And I think that was a really telling thing, because they didn't know, they couldn't sing the old stuff, and the new stuff wasn't good enough and convincing, although we tried our best at different times to write some of that. So I think I'm interested in the critique of what's going on to the right of it. And then to the left of it, what was interesting, there was a lot of theological exploration and debate. And I think some people moved off in what I would call a very liberal, progressive, but sometimes even a post-Christian direction, some of the people who'd been involved in these groups. And so in terms of what happened to it, it became almost, for some people, a way of, they found it very difficult to go back into anything approaching a traditional confessional orthodoxy in terms of Christian worship. So I just wanted to make those points, because those are things I still think about a lot in terms of the legacy of the movement and what was going on.
That's somewhere I was going to go with this, but we were talking, we had a bit of a pre-discussion about this, and one of the things we were talking about was the number of de-churched people who still regard themselves as having a connection with Christian faith, but actually church doesn't do it for them. And certainly we found at Beyond that's a constituency that we speak to quite a lot. Again, if you feel you might be part of that group, could you like to put your hand up so we get a kind of a feel? I think Greenbelt is a kind of a place for de-churched people who still want to prove that they're connected, but actually gathering once a year is about all we can manage. So there's something about that. There's also something about the institutionalization of this edge movement that I would like us to talk about. We've all talked about how the democratic way we came up with alternative worship content, how we all worked together on them, that there was quite often not a front, or that it was a collaborative thing. That's very non-church like. Church is very front led. I'm a priest. I'm expected to be up front and do the whole thing. How much is the decline in alternative worship the church's fault?
I don't know who wants to have a go at that one.
Do you want me to?
Yeah.
I mean, I think with innovation, you just get a diffusion. I mean, it's as simple as that for me, that what happened, and particularly the profile, I think, through Greenbelt and some other things, it inspired people, and things like you know, now we don't think anything about this, but having stations which, you know, would be interactive things around the space, you would probably think is normal in loads of churches. And that's just the diffusion of innovation. And from my point of view, that's great. You know, why not? There's not a problem with it. The church, you know, certainly Methodist, Church of England created a pathway where at least theoretically you could get ordained as a pioneer. And I think that was the church honestly thinking, we think this is good. How do we engage with it within our structures and systems? People have gone down that route. Well, maybe they better speak for themselves, but it's been harder than they thought, or what they signed up for wasn't necessarily what they got to deal with, let's put it that way. But I think at one level there's a natural diffusion of innovation, and that's okay. I always look, any of you know the band Cold Cut? And then we're going back now. Remember the guys Cold Cut? They were sort of around the time of all of this stuff. And they had a strap line on their website, I don't know if they still do, that says, Cold Cut, always ahead of the game. Yes, mate. And I think, you know, if people pick up what you're doing, you just got to be creative, move on, innovate. You know, so I really don't see the church picking this stuff up and responding to it in creative ways as anything other than great. Why not? I mean, why is that a problem?
I think there's a fine line between recognizing something by the institution and wanting to encourage it, and creating barriers around it. The church really tries to navigate between those two things, about allowing alternative forms of ministry, but then not giving them jobs to do afterwards, or still insisting that they use certain forms of liturgy, all that kind of stuff. It's an interesting balance that the church is stuck in, really, and is trying its best with.
So what you're saying really is that formalizing it can stifle it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking back at Vox, it was kind of short-lived, but to my mind, it was like a bit of a blossom, you know, it kind of lasted as long as it needed to last. And one of the things I think that started to bring it to an end was a question of scale, because more people came wanting to be kind of involved in the process of creating these things. And then, it, you know, when something gets a bit too big, you're not one group anymore, and then, you know, certain people maybe come in and start trying to organize everybody, and then it kind of lost its life. But I think for me, thinking about now 20 years later, I'm not in an Anglican church, but one of the things I keep coming across all the time is that sense of, which I don't think people really speak about that much, but I think there's tremendous spiritual hunger in the church and amongst Christians. And I think a lot of that is linked with the fact that there's a kind of, I feel that the church, and I hate to say it in that monolithic, sort of megalithic sort of term, but there's a sense in which there's always that crushing of the creative core that I think is at the heart of spirituality and at the heart of faith. And I keep, everywhere I go, I keep finding that is a real problem in most congregations, that there are all these people whose desire to kind of create and maybe do things that are risky and maybe not authorized are just not kind of allowed, or they don't feel that they have the permission to do it. And I think there's a lot to be said about a group like Vox. It's just a group of people just got off and did it. You know, it wasn't within a church context. And I think I'd love to see more of that, you know, just do it and find somewhere, or do it on the street, or do it in your living room. It doesn't really matter. But I just think it's so important, you know, if your own church congregation doesn't encourage or doesn't somehow approve of creativity and experimentation, to just go and do it yourself, basically, but not in a way that's divisive. I don't mean in a way that's going, oh, we're doing something that's kind of better than you, or not in that. I don't mean in that spirit, because I think divisiveness is really dangerous, and it's not something I'd want to see. But we desperately need that kind of that freedom of expression. You know, sorry, ranted there can on a
be,
bit there.
Yeah, there can be something really powerful about partnership and permission as well. And I was reflecting whilst a number of you were talking about how in my day job, I've learned skills which I learned before through working in alternative worship, in partnering with groups. For example, in 2022, we had a vigil in the cathedral just before a really profound and powerful funeral. And the vigil was for the Ukrainian people in Cornwall. And so the partnership was creating a space where people could lament and could do what they needed to do. And what we could do was offer and be hospitable and create a space, but also light that space in a beautiful way and partner with the groups who needed to say something to God, and giving them help in organizing that so that they could worship. So it's almost, there can be tremendous possibilities in those moments of interaction between different cultures and the church, and enabling those spaces to happen where people can be given the language or the framework in which to worship.
Doug, I know if you've got something you want interesting to something you'd like to say. Sorry, not interesting. So, of course, it'll be interesting. That you'd like to say about the relationship between these experimental kind of things that we're talking about and ecclesiology, and are those always going to be fighting against each other?
Perhaps. I mean, the other thing, I think, for those of us who were involved in it, it was absolutely exhausting. Yeah. And a lot of folk who, here who have been involved in those groups, to some extent, both the democratic nature of it and the co-production involved in it meant that people burned themselves out within a lot of groups in terms of the process. And so I'm not just going to say, oh, it was the church crushing our creativity. It was, and also as groups go on, then they come up against all the other issues of unity and order and doctrine. And that any church group comes up with, and trying to then hold those things in the right kind of balance is not easy, and all Christian communities struggle with that. So I think to some extent, you know, some of the groups that stopped, and I wouldn't say failed, but I think you know, the difficulty was that lots of the people who'd been involved in that found it very difficult to re-enter traditional church, I think, because they'd had a taste of both a kind of freedom, but also at its best, I think there was a kind of quality of religious experience and aesthetic experience within alternative worship services that was a fairly unique blend. And that you went back to basically, okay, well, you've got Teze, you've got Iona, you've got, charismatic, you know, big worship band worship. But there was something about the kind of, the mixing, of traditions that happened within alternative worship that its best could be enormously powerful. And that's why I think we haven't pushed past Johnny. I know you think I'm maybe being nostalgic here, but I think that in a sense we've had to revert to more standard options. But that was partly because producing the bespoke stuff was very tiring.
Yeah, it's such a lot of work. And look at us. We're not exactly spring chickens, are we? There is something about. I mean, we used to say it beyond that we. Well, we still do, that we're not a church, but we would recommend people to a church if they wanted to pursue what we were doing. You know, so they come to some kind of beachfront meditation with a nice sculpture based on the Psalms, and then come to me and say, well, can you send me to a church that will give me a similar experience? It's just not going to happen. There is some disconnect there a little bit, and to a certain extent, the movement, which is still going, perhaps not as strongly as it was, but is still going, was always destined to be something that grew bright and flared for a time, and, you know, was there for a time. And certain groups, I think, felt we are here for a particular purpose, for a particular time, and now we're going to close down and move on. Johnny's got something to say.
Yeah, just a quick comment on that. Kester Bruin, who is part of Vox and is speaking on AI here, I think, he used an analogy of punk, which I found quite helpful. He said that some of that alt-worship stuff was a bit like punk in that it blew open a hole in the cultural space in the same way that punk did. But with punk, it wasn't that everything thereafter was going to be punk. And in some ways, post-punk was a more interesting cult. Well, this is my own opinion. It was a bit more interesting than punk. So I quite like that idea that what part of what some of the early alt-worship stuff did was blast open a cultural space that gave other people permission to step into that and do creative things. I thought that was quite a nice take.
Yeah. And I think we have to recognise as well that we talked about this a lot earlier, that Greenbelt was an important incubator for a lot of this. And for various reasons, particularly when it's moved to this greenfield site, that was not as easy to do. I think if there's a message you want to say to Greenbelt, I would want to say to Greenbelt is we would love to have some more of that. Personally, I would like to have some more of that.
Wow. That's a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. So I was thinking that we ought to try and find a way that we can capture anybody else who'd like to get involved in getting this movement going again. But we did promise we would have a Q&A. So Liz, I don't know how you want to do this, or we've lost the microphone at the longest lead.
If you are able to kind of come forward to the microphone, then that was probably the simplest thing. But if you want to ask a question and you're not able to come forward, please raise your hand and I will try and get as close to you as I can. Is that the long? We'll swap with that. Yeah. So please, is this one? Yeah. Sorry. Please don't be shy. Come forward if you can, and then I'll go out as well for those of you that can't. But form an orderly queue over here.
There's so much to reflect on. I was also involved in this. I just think the things that we've missed in this. I just want to say a few things that I think are missed, and that's the bigger context of the church and its decline generally. I think there's something deep about what happened with, obviously, with NOS, which was a kind of flagship and the disaster of that in many ways. And that whole thing about what is a healthy relationship with the institute, what's good episcopate oversight that was lacking for NOS, which was, you know, so what does it look like? It is great if we all just do our stuff, but there are dangers in that. So, but I also think there's something, maybe there is a kind of long, slow span here, but maybe there aren't. We came out of a certain time period, you know, and maybe there hasn't been as many young people who perhaps don't feel as empowered as we did. We had a particular empowerment to do that. Maybe at the moment, young people don't have that in the way that we did. I just wanted to put it into that. But I think for some of us, there's been this long, slow wrestling with the institution, and perhaps for some of us, the journey back in might open up some new possibilities, but there is something about how do we sit in relationship to the institution that is itself in a survival game and very worried about its own survival. So I just think there's a really big picture around all this.
I think it's really important to acknowledge, and we've not talked about it particularly, but the 9 o'clock service was incredibly formative for lots of people and really important, but went so disastrously wrong. And of course, there are court cases ongoing right now. And that's a terrible indictment on the way things did develop very quickly and unregulated. And so there is definitely a place for the church to be making sure that people are looked after. That's very important. And that failed in that situation. I don't know who wants to say anything about. Yeah. Okay. Go with the next one.
Yeah. Just following up something Doug was saying about the kind of left and the right, kind of what followed after emerging church and alt worship. And one of the things that hasn't really been kind of emphasized particularly, but in my experience, that the kind of whole emerging church thing was it wasn't just a style of worship, but also associated with a, I don't know, liberal or progressive, whatever language you want to use, kind of theology. And when the kind of Fresh Expressions movement and the official report from the Church of England were written, it seemed at first that there was going to be a kind of real engagement with that side. And my impression now is a lot of the stuff that comes out under the Fresh Expressions or the pioneering label, and this may be a complete unfair generalisation, if it is, please do comment, but I get the impression a lot of it comes from the more conservative, charismatic, evangelical camp. I just wondered what anyone had to say about if that's accurate or any thoughts.
Yes, I mean, what to say about that? I mean, we've been real advocates at CMS around pioneering, and I don't know that we use any of those terms, progressive, liberal, whatever. We're probably just focused on mission in the community out of a broader imaginative theology, I think. But within the Church of England, you know, evangelical charismatics have got their act together to plant, get resource, get behind, get things going. So they've been quite dominant and done well, I think, in many ways. Fresh Expressions movement itself was very keen to try and connect with all sides of all streams in the Church of England. So there were books published on sacramental Fresh Expressions. People like Ian Mobsby and others were real advocates for that. So there have been attempts to get a broader base. But I mean, I don't entirely disagree with your analysis, but please don't call what we're doing at CMS conservative evangelical. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Anyone out here that wanted to ask a question, I can bring a microphone to you. Hands?
One thing I'm aware of is that charismatic roots, actually, I think, and the kind of charismatic church, which was very empowering to the people within the congregations, I think actually had more of an influence than sometimes we credit it for.
And being led by the Spirit.
Whereas the youngsters coming up after us didn't have that particular experience of very communal charismatic worship.
My reflection on listening this afternoon is that protest movements don't make disciples. And it seems to me that a lot of the people involved in alternative worship, Andy Thornton, already name checked, wrote a paper where he basically said we were working on spiritual capital we got from other places, but we never put it into the groups that we were with, and the people then never were able to take over anything from us. I just wonder, is that the weakness of a service movement rather than a discipling movement?
I think it's something in that. I mean, Andy's my pal, so I can't disagree on him too strongly. But discipling is a complicated term. People were learning a lot of new skills and a lot of new habits, discipleship and the way people think about discipleship can be very conformist within the church. And so the idea that to follow Christ might involve a really exciting journey of creativity and co-creating with other people, I think learning those kind of habits is being discipled into something. But I think theologically that there is something to what he's saying, and I think that I mean, I'm still a big believer. I teach preaching. I think preaching is an interesting form, and preaching became very marginalized within most alternative worship groups. So I think it's something about that, about how we handle preaching, Christian education, and that kind of thing. But I'll just stop there because I'm conscious there's more people wanting to ask questions.
I will just say, I mean, as I said, beyond, we always knew when we started that our purpose was to run events to provoke people to think about God, and never to be a church. And I'm not sure that I reflect back on that. Well, we should have probably had something to follow that up. But thanks. Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. It's been really interesting listening to kind of the history of alternative worship. And I felt moved to come up and speak with you and have a question, partly because I've been involved in a more recent one that very recently came to an end, which was kind of thinking and reflecting through how it had kind of come about. And there are people here I know who've been part of Borough Common. And out of Borough Common, I was part of something called Soup Group, because we met on a Tuesday and had soup. So that's kind of where the name came from. But we met and did the Northumbria Liturgy together. And this was something just amongst friends in London, born out of Greenbelt, I think, will be people who can correct me. And there was something really brilliant in that community coming together, doing something that we felt we needed. A lot of people were sort of post-charismatic. And then recently it came to an end in part because there wasn't the energy. I think there might have been a bit of burnout, lots of factors. I don't think any of us could quite put our finger on it. And we had a beautiful service actually of online where we brought it to an end. So it wasn't this sort of fizzling, are we meeting, are we not meeting, did we meet one person? Then we actually, there was a decision to kind of close it, which was really helpful. But I think my question and the thing I've been mulling over is you've been talking a lot about the context of the church and whether it's been nurturing for alternative worship or not. But I'm thinking about the broader context sort of in society and the world that, I mean, I'm 42, not as young. So like what younger people and people in my generation are working within, even if we want to have something different and alternative and we're railing against the church is our area, this is what we've got on offer, we want to do something different. But a lot of people were starting new families, and that was one of the reasons I think we didn't have the energy and we all sort of moved house. It was some of these logistical things that I think brought it to an end. So what is it as well about today's socio-political context as well, with cost of living and climate crisis and all these other things I think we're managing and living with, that means that time for creativity feels like it's, you know, dwindled a bit or less time for it.
Yeah, well, I think this is also an issue, a political issue, isn't it? Because there's that constant refrain that somehow the arts and, you know, creative expression is some kind of nice thing to do on a Saturday when you've done the housework and everything else is, you know, that sort of attitude. Whereas in fact, I mean, I just believe so passionately that that now is precisely the time that if you think about the kind of the energies that get harnessed when you're drawing out of yourself and encouraging others to draw out of themselves what God has uniquely placed in them, that's what we need, because I think that's where you start to kind of imagine the new possibilities and new ways that we can be together and do things. It doesn't come from above. It comes from outside of those relationships and those practices. So, I mean, personally, I think it's something that we really need to be quite forceful, well, not forceful about, but to really advocate for the importance of creative expression and experiment and daring to experiment and daring to take some risks. And if we don't do it, no one's going to say, oh, come on and do it. We've got to do it. And you don't need money for it. You don't need all those things. You can just get together with someone and start doing it.
I know there's plenty of lots of other people want to say, we have to bring this to a close at some point, and I just want to, as you've been talking about creativity, what I'm going to do is draw the session to a close with a little creative act that we all do together, and then we'll chat with everybody here, if that's okay. Yeah, so you've all got, well, a lot of you have got water bottles. Would you like to just put a little drop of water on your hand? Someone near you hasn't got, because it's actually not hard to do this creative stuff. Well, tell me afterwards whether you think it is or not. Water is vital to life. It is a gift from God. Like this water, each of our lives is precious and special. God has given us a life that is beyond price. Take a moment to thank God for the gift of life. This water is necessary for growth. Without water, the growing process will slow down and stop. So we ask God to help us to become what we were made to be. Now take a little drink from that water if you can. Water is refreshing, quenches our thirst and revives us, but often we become stale and stagnant. We pray that God will give us his living water. Jesus said, anyone who drinks the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water I give them will become a well inside of them that will never be dry. It will give them life forever.
Lord Jesus, give us this water, then we will never be thirsty again. And in the pouring rain tomorrow, I hope you'll remember that as a blessing. Doug's book is Remixing the Church. Johnny Baker has written a book, Curating Worship. Mark Pearson, who many of us think of as the godfather of alternative worship, also has a brilliant book about curating worship. As we talked about church being outside or doing things outside of church, my book last year is Church Beyond Walls. It's about the art projects that we ran with tips about how to do your own. I'll be doing a book signing at 5 o'clock in the bookshop as well. So thank you so much for coming. Sorry we didn't have a chance to get to everybody's questions, but we'll chat afterwards. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Martin and Hannah.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.